Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Yeah, we established that. There was some Botox amongst the show.
Just you.
And I, yeah, just me. Oh, no, and Lindsay. Me and Lindsay.
Self-care. Self-care, yes, guys. Nothing self-care. Wrong with self-care.
All right, so we've talked about this. Fast Track has been iced by the powers that be. And they said, come up with something new, something different. It's been 10 years. Try a new idea. And so we have. It is called Quick Street. Do we have the sound of the Quick Street?
Quick Street.
Quick Street. There you go. All right. So John, we're going to roll the dice. You give me a number 1 to 6, and we'll decide who goes first, okay?
All right. I'll take 3.
Wow. 3 on the money.
3 on the money. Woo! John, you go first.
Quick Mary's Street.
Quick Street. All right, Mace. In Australia, they have a racing division called Supercars. Like we have stock cars or Indy cars.
Yep.
There is, or maybe I should say was, one female driver in Supercars, a woman named Renee Gracie. Supercars has distanced itself from Gracie following the revelation that she's now a porn star.
Wow.
With a staggering 7,000 paid subscribers. In a statement that all but closes the door on a racing comeback for Gracie, a Supercars spokesman made it clear that the race car driver turned adult entertainer was no longer welcome in the sport, and they don't want her back. But let's say she wanted to come back. Is it fair to shut her out just because she became an adult entertainer? If you were running Supercars, wouldn't you want her back, or would you want her gone?
Here's the thing. I've never even heard of Supercars till I heard one of their drivers is a porn star. I mean, I think in this day and age, there is so much porn.
Right.
So much porn out there, and so many people are involved in it. I think it's time that we stop discriminating against people with porn on the internet.
I'm shocked. I've been arguing this for years. Porn stars are people, too. We should not give them a scarlet letter.
Yep.
After all, they're not wearing anything. I think that if this woman wanted to come back, what's wrong with that? I mean, would they lose advertising? I was trying to see their side of it. What
Supercar? What is Supercar? I didn't know until they had a porn star driver.
Right. So what I would think is maybe you get Pornhub to be like on one of the cars.
On one of the
cars.
You
get
exactly.
Sponsors on the cars.
Yep.
I think they're looking at this in completely the wrong way.
All right. Funch.
Quick Street.
All right. So Darren Revelle reports that a signed Zion Williamson rookie card has just sold for $100,000 on eBay. John, do you understand the idea of buying a collectible item as an investment?
No. And by the way, part of the 30 for 30 that you haven't seen.
Yep.
Todd McFarlane, the comic book guy.
Yeah, sure.
Bought all of Maguire and Sosa's home run balls back in the day. And he spent top dollar for them. And now he'd be lucky, like he paid $3 million for one of them. And now he'd be lucky to get $1 million for all the balls combined. I've never been a memorabilia guy, don't own any memorabilia. I know, don't you have like 100 Frank Thomas rookie cards?
Yeah, I was buying Frank Thomas rookie cards for a dime. And I've got 500 of them. And they're now worth $60 a pop.
What are you going to do with them? When are you going to cut loose? When are you going to sell them?
After I retire, I'm just going to sell them one at a time. Hey, I need $60. Here's a Frank Thomas rookie card. I'm going to pay. I'm going to pay in Frank Thomas rookie cards.
Yeah, I've never been. Do you own any other collectibles besides that?
I own other baseball cards. Like I've got a Steve Carlton rookie, a Tom Seaver rookie, but I bought them as investments, and they are now worth something. I've got, you know, like maybe 15 Ricky Henderson rookies. I've got maybe 30 Ken Griffey Jr. rookies. But I'm saving them because eventually when I retire, I'm going to live on baseball cards.
I don't think that's going to happen, but it's funny you think that.
Funch.
Quick Street.
All right. Mace, a guy named Trent Tweddle and his dog Loki are recovering after last Monday they went on a walk on their Florida farm and it turned vicious. The dog had his front paws in the river that had swelled up after the rain, and the dog was attacked by a gator. According to Tweddle, a nearly 13-foot alligator grabbed his 6-year-old rescue pup and pulled him into the water. Tweddle, a former Army staff sergeant, quickly reacted. He said, quote, "I grabbed the dog's collar to try and pull him back, and I ended up in a tug-of-war match with this gator, and the gator was not letting go.
Wow.
So I let go of the collar. I got about knee-deep into the water and started pounding on the gator's head until he eventually let go. Tweddle got away with minor scratches, but Loki had to undergo emergency surgery after his front leg was partially severed." Aww. "They were able to fix it." Now, you love your dogs.
Yes.
Honest answer here. Would you be willing to go into the water and fight a 13-foot alligator to save one of your pups?
You better believe it. If one of my pups was in that kind of trouble, I would absolutely throw down my life for him. I mean, I love those dogs. Those dogs keep me sane, keep me happy, keep me company. I love them. And if it was a gator, if it was a coyote, no matter what it was, I would throw my life down for him.
I remember one time, I don't know if I've ever told you this story. I was walking Reagan, the Puggle, through our neighborhood, and we came upon a little tiny dog, you know, like a purse dog.
Yeah, a purse dog.
And Reagan is very friendly, friendly with people, friendly with dogs. And so I always say if a person or a dog walks up to her, oh, she's friendly, and Reagan will play or she'll like lick your face or something. And for whatever reason, Reagan thought she was playing and took this dog, like opened her mouth and grabbed the back of the dog's neck.
What?
Like, and she's never done it before or since. And I grabbed Reagan's collar and whacked her as hard as I could in her on her back, and she immediately freaked out and let go of the dog, and the dog was fine. The dog just ran away. But I was horrible. I often thought, it was an older guy walking his dog, and I often would have thought, what would I have said to that guy had the dog been seriously hurt or, God forbid, killed? And Reagan's, it was so weird. She's never done that with any other dog or any other person. And so, I mean, it just shows you, and this story does too, that you got to be prepared for anything with these dogs because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. No, my dogs get first class treatment at all times, and I would absolutely, I would go to extreme lengths to save my dogs from anything.
By the way, I have the first reaction to Quick Street.
Oh, from, yeah. What do people think of Quick Street so
far? My friend Mark Hoffman just texted me. You're like the baseball owners presenting the same thing with a different title. Love it. Yeah. It's the same proposal. We just changed a little bit of the dynamic.
I think we've changed it completely. This is a brand new bit to me. All right, Funch.
Quick Street.
Today, Courtney Cox won the birthday
coming up
of the day contest. So I want you to think of the six friends. So there's Matthew Perry.
I know them all. Yep. Matthew Lisa LeBlanc, David Schwimmer, Lisa Kudrow, Jennifer Aniston, and Courtney Cox.
Yep, you got them. You got them. All right, so I want you to rank order them from the ones you like to the ones you like the least.
Is in terms of, like, would I want to be friends with them or how good they were on the show?
How good they were on the show. Like, your favorite friends to your least favorite friend.
All right, the best friend was Phoebe. She was the funny. She had the best line. She was, like, Lisa Kudrow, I would put one.
Completely number two, agree.
Number two, I'd put Matthew Perry, who played Chandler. I thought he was very funny. I'd put, and these are interchangeable, I'd put Courtney Cox 3 and Jennifer Aniston 4. But I wouldn't kill you if you put Aniston 3 and Cox 4. And Schwimmer and Matt LeBlanc were just a complete waste of time. You could put them 5 and 6.
Really?
In whatever order you want. Although LeBlanc, when he came back later in episodes, was very funny. But on Friends, he was like, if you had to cut Friends, if you cut, well, I put Schwimmer last. LeBlanc 5, Schwimmer 6. What's yours?
In the opinion of everybody, I think Schwimmer is last.
Yep.
Schwimmer, I mean, God bless the guy. He made a lot of money. Good for him. Schwimmer is last.
I would put Marcel the Monkey ahead of Schwimmer.
You're completely right about Lisa Kudrow. She is number one. I would put Rachel Jennifer Aniston number two. I think you're underrating Joey Tribbiani. I think Joey Matt LeBlanc is number three. Then I've got Matthew Perry. Then I've got Courtney Cox, who I rank much lower than you guys do. And Schwimmer, of course, last. Everybody has Schwimmer last. I hope he's not listening.
I'm sure he's not. But, and now you say they're going to HBO Max?
The episodes, all the episodes of Friends are going to HBO Max.
Okay, so by the way, did
you'll never see him again.
All the whining we did about the screw-up that HBO did on the branding finally made, you know, HBO finally relented. They're getting rid of everything and just calling it HBO now. They're like HBO Go, HBO Now, all those things are gone. You either have HBO or HBO Max, that's it.
So I have to pay how much for HBO Max?
If you pay for HBO already, you get HBO Max for free. So I think you get it for free.
All right. So somebody
else. You pay Time Warner for HBO, right?
So HBO Go is going away.
Yes.
Because that's what I use now.
And so is HBO Now, whatever that was.
They have HBO Go, HBO Now, HBO Max, and HBO.
All right. Trudell has weighed in. What? Chandler 1, Joey 2, Rachel, Phoebe, Ross. He's a Northwestern alum, so he gets a slight bump. And then Monica last. You can't put Courtney Cox last, Trudell. Everybody knows Schwimmer is last.
Schwimmer is dead last on virtually everybody's list. All right. Funch.
Quick stream.
All right, Mace. Former Clemson players DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson got something done last week that few people thought they could. They petitioned the university to remove the name of John C. Calhoun from the school's Honors College. Calhoun, who served as vice president under John Quincy Adams, advocated for slavery, saying it was a positive good. The Clemson campus is built on Calhoun's Fort Hill Plantation, where, according to his bio on the school's website, he enslaved 70 to 80 African Americans. The issue is, most politicians from that era had slaves, including John Adams and Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
Still, Clemson went ahead and took Calhoun's name off the Honors College. They're now just going to simply call it the Clemson Honors College. Does this set a precedent that might affect hundreds, if not thousands, of buildings and roads across America? Did Clemson do the right thing taking Calhoun's name off of the Honors College? For example, can we still have the Washington Monument?
Yeah, it's a...
Or the Jefferson Monument?
It's a fair and complicated question. So this guy was not famous, the guy who was on the Honors College.
John C. Calhoun. Well, he was the vice president from 1825 to 1829.
And he owned slaves.
Yeah, and he was very pro-slave. Like, George Washington admitted later in his life that slavery wasn't great, but he had slaves.
Did Calhoun?
So did Jefferson.
Did Calhoun fight for the Confederacy?
I would assume, yeah. I mean,
you know, if you fought for the Confederacy, first of all, the thing that nobody says...
Clemson's in South Carolina, so I would assume.
Let's be honest. Whenever I see the Confederate flag, I think loser. Like, first of all, they were seditionists. Secondly, they lost the war. They're losers. I understand why people want to take down those monuments and take down those flags. I'm glad NASCAR got rid of that. This guy, I'd have to know more to be able to say whether or not he should have his name taken off. I know Clemson is sensitive right now because what happened with Dabo Swinney and that Coach Pearman, who apparently used the N-word at some point and wasn't really disciplined by Coach Swinney. So I know that there's some sensitivity down there, but I'd have to know more. But I really support the idea of getting rid of these Confederate monuments and the Confederate flag.
We spent a great deal of time on this last week while you were gone. I was working with Clinton Yates on the day they NASCAR came out and decided to get rid of all Confederate flags. And Clinton, who's a big NASCAR fan, couldn't believe it. And we had Ryan McGee from Marty and McGee on. And Ryan was fascinating. Ryan is the great-great-grandson of a dad and an uncle that fought for the Confederacy. So it's been a big part of his life. And he was arguing that it was completely long overdue. They should have done it years ago. Anybody that argues to keep the Confederate flag up and flying is an idiot who doesn't get it. And he's saying that as somebody who was born in that tradition and raised in it. And he lives on the border of North and South Carolina. So I think you got to do these on a case by case basis. I don't think we're going to lose the Washington Monument.
No, I don't think we're
going to lose the Jefferson Monument, but these cases are going to continue to come up. And you just got to look at them individually. And in this case, both, you know, for example, Hopkins, who is going to play for the Arizona Cardinals this year, you know, when at the beginning of games, when they recognize, they say, like, where are you from?
Yeah.
He says his high school. He would never say Clemson because he hated the Calhoun College.
Oh, wow.
So now maybe he'll go back to saying Clemson. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. More Quick Street is coming up next for you. Mason,
Wait, guys. We have Greg on the line.
Corporate Greg, welcome to Quick Street.
What's going on? Hey, I love Quick Street.
Oh,
it's
geez,
new.
Moron.
It's never happened before. When I listen to the music from Queen, if I go to top 20 in 2020, Queen is right there with Don't Stop Me Now. So this is fantastic.
So you're digging it?
Oh, it's one of the worst things I've ever heard.
Yeah. So why did you kill Fast Track? Why'd you kill it?
Okay, why did I kill it? I love how you are putting this on me and putting this all over Twitter that I was the one that did this. Let me ask you guys a question.
By the way, it's at Bergman Greg killed Fast Track.
Let me ask you guys a question. How hard did you fight to keep it?
But wait, Greg, couldn't I make the argument that once we found out that you and Amanda hated Fast Track, we put a ton of work into that. It takes us a long time to write it. So why would we continue to pour our hearts into something that you two hate?
Well, I mean, you're asking a question with a question. How hard did you guys fight? You didn't fight for it at all.
The toughest part of any job is doing what your boss wants. And you told us in basically no uncertain terms that we should get rid of it. And it was you that led the charge.
I love how you're putting it on me. That's great. But either way, it was old. It wasn't doing as well as it used to do. It just doesn't – you did put a lot of work into it, but a lot of it just wasn't all that great. It was boring. It was long. It was hour long.
There you go. For people who are wondering what happened to Fast Track, there's your answer.
It was too
Greg Bergman killed it. All right, so does Siri have anything to say to this, Lindsay? Funch?
Gotcha, Betty Pantsuit and Corporate Greg. Ha ha ha.
we're not doing Quick
Street. We're not doing Quick Street.
Oh.
Quick Street was our one-day protest to mock you for getting rid of Fast Track.
Very well done. I had no idea that it was a joke.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't.
All right. Thank you, Corporate Greg.
All right, thanks, man.
Okay. And he is the one that killed it. Knife in the back.
Yes, yeah, send your complaints to at Bergman Greg.
Coming up next for you, baseball in turmoil. Rob Manfred has done a 180. He says now the baseball season is in question, plus Dwight Howard saying that he thinks that playing this NBA season in the bubble in Orlando could detract from the Black Lives Matter movement. We got both those stories coming up next for you. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, so there's a bunch of stuff going on today. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We appreciate you. Dwight Howard, Avery Bradley, among the players on a call with Kyrie Irving over the weekend. There's concerns about living in the bubble in Orlando. Also, there is a concern that by playing basketball right now, They're going to be distracting from the Black Lives Matter movement, from protesting police brutality, fighting for racial justice. Dwight says, I agree with Kyrie. Basketball or entertainment, period, isn't needed at this moment and will only be a distraction. Sure, it might distract us players, but we don't have resources at hand that the majority of our community don't. Especially with the way the climate is now, I would love nothing more than to win my first championship, but the unity of my people would be an even bigger championship.
Okay, so a lot to unpack here. First of all, I'm not going to be like a lot of people I've heard today who are killing Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard. I think that part of what we've learned in this protest era is that we got to listen to each other. We got to hear what the other side has to say and go from there. I just disagree with it. I think they would be smarter to play and use their platform. But, Mace, part of the issue of everything we've learned with Black Lives Matter is nobody was listening to anybody before. So right. we've got to listen to their perspective and see if there's anything to it. I just, when I consider all their options, I don't think they're doing the right thing. For example, let me play you a clip from Michael Wilbon, okay, who is on Pardon the Interruption today. And Wilbon, who I think almost everybody knows, is African-American, yep, and very outspoken, talks specifically about the decision to play versus the decision not to play in relation to their cause. Here's what he said.
There are two different dynamics at play here. One is the bubble and concern people might have over that, over the coronavirus. Can they be kept safe? How legitimate is the plan for the bubble? Do they feel that that's adequate? There's that issue. And then there's the issue of whether or not people should be playing because of the protests in the aftermath of George Floyd. And Tony, just let me say this. If you got concerns about coronavirus, I understand that. People will have concerns. Some guys have voiced that. But for Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard to say, we don't want to work because we want to pay attention, that's your platform, gentlemen. You're not college professors. You're not musicians. You're not the heads of industry of science and technology. Everybody has a platform at a certain level. You are elite, skilled athletes with an enormous platform. Use it. If you don't use it, that would be shameful and irresponsible. Use it. You got a microphone every day. Pick up the mic and open your mouths. You can continue the dialogue. Charles Barkley said it best this morning on Get Up when he said, what are they talking about? Out of sight, out of mind. What are you saying? You're before the public on one of the two great international sports stages in the world, soccer and basketball. So what are you saying? We don't want to play. This is what you do to hold people captive. You've got to be that smart. And if you're not that smart, there are people surrounding you who are that smart. I know Austin Rivers and others get it. And so, Tony, I must think there's still going to be a season. They're still going to play. Coronavirus issues, the bubble, that's over here. I understand it. Yeah. We just don't want to play because we don't want to distract attention. What? That's insane reasoning.
Now, I wouldn't have been that accusatory and say you guys are crazy, blah, blah, blah. I understand that, you know, you played, we maybe should play it again, the Steven Jackson comments that he feels passionate that anything that takes away from the cause is not good.
Let's go ahead and play the Steven Jackson. Just to be fair, here's what Steven Jackson said about the same phone call and this sentiment that basketball will somehow detract from the movement.
Hey, what up, world? Man, I love the NBA, man. That's my family. But now ain't the time to be playing basketball, y'all. Now ain't the time. Playing basketball is going to do one thing. Take all the attention off the task at hand right now, what we fighting for. Everybody going to be worrying about the playoffs. They're going to have all that blasted all over the TV. And nobody's going to be talking about getting justice for all these senseless murders by the police. And nobody's going to be focusing on the task at hand, bro. None of these white owners have spoken up. None of them are taking a stand. Yeah, they might post a video when the season start of saying what we should do, but they ain't doing nothing. Playing basketball ain't going to do nothing but make them money and take the attention of what we fighting for, what we marching for. It's bigger than all of us, and it's bigger as it's bigger than the game. And it's sad that we still got to explain that to people, bro. Sad.
So that's the other side of it.
Yeah, that's the other side. And you know, I'm not gonna judge. I just think that the right move is to take advantage of the platform, to take advantage of the fact that you are going to have the eyes of the world. Particularly, by the way, if baseball crashes and burns, the stage is entirely yours in the month of August. You will have microphones everywhere. There will be cameras everywhere. You will have the opportunity to speak to your issues and talk about what you care about on a grand, grand stage with unbelievable scope. To me, the smart move, the right move, is to take advantage of that. Take advantage of the fact that you will be the only show in town. The eyes of the world will be on you, and you will get a chance to speak to the issues of Black Lives Matter, speak to the issues of police brutality, speak to the issues of racial justice, speak to the issues of criminal justice reform. Take advantage of that. Don't miss that opportunity.
Yeah, I basically agree with Wilbon. I think that the platform is gigantic and that you'd be making a mistake if you don't use it. For example, we've been trying to get Dwight Howard on the show, and and they won't give him to us. They basically have said, look, the players are going to talk when we get a season and when we start to go down there, and that's when you'll start to hear from more of the players.
Now, this is the platform, by the way.
Yeah.
Missing the platform.
I'm sure if Dwight wanted to go on, he could go on independent of the team. But once they get down to Orlando, everybody's going to want to talk to him. And they can get their message out that way. And unlike the NFL, I don't think the league or the team is going to try and stop them. I think whatever they come up with in terms of a protest or how they want to speak out on this issue, it not only will be accepted, it'll be encouraged.
Well, why don't we ask for Dwight Howard? Why don't we call Dwight's agent and say, hey, does Dwight want to come on?
The Lakers would kill us because we're the Lakers station. If we go around the Lakers, they'd kill us.
But these are important issues.
I'm just telling you. You're going to end up in a meeting.
I'm not going to say I'm staying out of it.
Is a Zoom meeting? Because I have trouble actually logging into Zoom.
It is. I think they're eventually, when they get down there and they get a season and they decide to, you know, what they're doing and they come up with a plan. By the way, I think that's part of what Michelle Roberts was talking about when she said, don't read what Kyrie and Dwight said as some type of fracture. These guys are just talking. They're talking about their options. They're talking about why they should go down there and what they should do when they get down there. They still have a chance to get unified. McMenamin had a story yesterday on ESPN.com talking about, he talked to several Laker players and they think they can still all come together in plenty of time, even though guys like Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley have a different opinion on this. So I'm not, you know, as a Laker fan, I'm not worried that they don't have time to come together. The first game isn't until July 30th. It's June 15th. So they got time to work all this out.
Yeah. All right. We'll take some phone calls next. We've got that, plus we've got baseball on the verge of a crash and burn. 877-710-ESPN. What do you think of Dwight Howard's contention that playing the season, and Avery Bradley, by the way, could detract from the Black Lives Matter movement? And also baseball on the verge of just disaster. 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-ESPN. Mesa in Ireland, 710-ESPN. Oh, boy. Boys of summer. We may not see them this summer. By the way, Jonathan Lemire from the AP writes, MLB letter obtained by the AP says several players and staff have tested positive for COVID-19.
Oh, boy, that'll help the situation, huh?
Yeah, no, that stabilizes everything.
Oh, gosh. Let's go to Todd in Inglewood. Phones are open, 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. Hi, Todd, how are you?
What's up? How you guys doing today? Hey, I'm a little hot right now. Wilbon, I used to have respect for him. You know what? But what he just said It makes no sense. He's telling Dwight Howard to just hush his mouth and use his platform. He needs to hush his mouth. He sounds exactly like Donald Trump when he told LeBron James, just hush your mouth and dribble the basketball. That's what it sounds like he's telling him. And you know what? Hey, I'm the first one. I want basketball, okay? And let's be truthful about it. It's going to take the attention off of what African Americans are trying to do now. Because I already told my wife, I want some basketball so I don't have to watch CNN all day. I'm going to be truthful about it. But, hey, who's to say these guys go play? And you just said yourself that the MLB has reported players having the coronavirus. These guys go play and they get sick.
Do you support the idea, Todd, of not playing in order to keep the focus on the Black Lives Matter movement?
I'm gonna tell you the truth. I want basketball, but as a young Black man, I've been mistreated by the police. And don't get me wrong, I've had good ones and I've had bad ones.
Sure.
But I have been a mistreated. And with this issue, we have never had a voice. It has always been swept underneath the rug. And my mom always told me, boy, if you clean up the house and every day you sweep the trash underneath the rug, one day I'll go trip over it, and you know what? I'm going to beat your butt. So my last point is this. You know what I'm saying? It's going to take the issue off of Black Lives Matter. And you know what? I'm not going to say every Black athlete, but every athlete that has love inside his heart, no matter African-American, white, Hispanic, Chinese, no matter what he is, if you have love in your heart, that means that you love every man regardless. And if there's an issue worth fighting for, if all the players decide, you know what, I will not play. Because hey, at the end of the day, Martin Luther King Jr. was able to do what he did simply because he hit the people's pocketbooks.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they want to get the players back out there. The main reason is the money.
All right.
Thank you, Todd, for the phone call.
Thank you.
I actually think here's one thing I would agree with what Todd said. I think that rather than shout down Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard, we should listen to what they have to say. And Steven Jackson's on their side of this argument, too. And then just try and convince them why there's a better way. I don't think that you're watering down or lessening your protests if you play. I think you're enhancing it in a lot of ways by using the platform. They seem to think that it would be distracting.
Todd is basically right, though. I mean, it will attract a lot of the African-American protesters, a lot of people who care, will take attention away from that. There's no question about it. But there's got to be some sort of compromise situation. Like you said, they never show the national anthem.
Right. Maybe they could.
Maybe they can show the national anthem.
Or how about this, Mace, if you want to, we were talking about this while you were gone. Why do we play the national anthem before sporting events? We don't do it, and I actually enjoy it. I'm a fan of it. So I wouldn't, if I owned a team, I would continue to do it. But if you think about it, we don't do it before a Broadway show. We don't do it before a concert. We don't do it before a movie. And those are all large gatherings of people.
It's tradition.
Right. But, I mean, there have been a lot of traditions that we've changed. What if we took instead of the anthem, what if we took that 1 minute and honored someone who lost their life unfairly or did something to promote Black Lives Matter? Would that be appropriate? I don't know. But there is no real good. I read an article, and again, I'm for the anthem. I enjoy being, you know, recognized in the country. I'm patriotic. I like it. But you could change that up. We don't do it before any other big, large public gathering except at sporting events. It's just a matter of if you like. I think there's some things you can consider. For example, that's one I would keep the anthem. But you can talk about it. You could talk about using that time to, you know, sure, to promote a different cause or to honor a different thing. What if, okay, so all these players are going to make, if they play, are going to make millions. In the case of the superstars, you know, sometimes 30, 40 million. What if the players pooled some money and donated that money to advance a cause and got the owners to double whatever they donated? So if the players as a group collectively came up with $30 million to donate to whatever cause they wanted to promote, and they got the owners to throw in 60, would that work? I don't know, but yeah, it might help. And it's a lot easier to do if you have the income from the games.
And by the way, and you've got the leverage.
Right.
You've actually got leverage right now.
Right.
If you say, look, we want to be able to use this platform more effectively, more broadly, to touch more people, in any of the ways that you just said.
And by the way,
this group of players has got leverage.
And by the way, before we kill Kyrie and Dwight Howard, even though you and I both think they're using the wrong tactic, but if something like that came about, it was all started because Kyrie questioned if they were doing enough.
Yeah.
You know, Kyrie and Dwight want to know, is this the best use for promoting the most important thing to us, which is the cause? And so sometimes conversations start that way,
right,
but end up in a completely different place. And so what I would argue to Kyrie and Dwight, and it sounds like that Dwight is considering all options, is, hey, let's play, but let's come up with ways to promote the things you're passionate about.
Right.
And let's use some of the money that we're coming in, or try and get the owners or the league to partner with us financially to address some of these things that are important. Going back to the word you used, we've got some leverage here. Let's see what we can do with it.
Yep. All right. Coming up next for you, brand new thing. It's called Game of Games.
Quick
John.
Street? Oh.
No. Brand new thing. It's called Game of Games. You know, we have a great tradition of games on Mason and Ireland. Normally, they would be part of Fast Track, but Corporate Greg and Boss Betty Pantsuit killed that. So we're going to do something called Game of Games, and we are going to keep track of how many games each person wins during a month, and we will crown the Game of Games champion at the end of every month. So it is June the 15th. So we've got basically 2 weeks' worth of games. Who amongst us will be the king of Game of Games? I've got the very first game coming up next for you, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland, what is going on? It is Monday. All kinds of stuff going on. Baseball, Dwight Howard, we'll talk about all that stuff coming up for you with Alan Sliwa at the top of the hour. We will dive into all of it. In the meantime, we're doing a brand new thing called Game of Games. So I've got the very first game. We've got about 2 weeks' worth of games, John, and somebody will score the most wins, and they will win the Game of Games. All right?
Very exciting.
So I've got the first game. It is Something Everywhere game. So it's basically seven questions. You buzz in with your name. These can be about anything. Lindsay, you can play. And obviously, Funch, you can play. You're both in for Game of Games, okay?
Wait, can John play too?
And of course John could play.
You didn't mention
it. I always play.
Just clarifying.
John
just clarifying.
Plays. John,
gotta
Lindsay,
sure
and Funch.
Rules.
All in the war for Game of Games. All right. Here's
that nice game show music, by the way, Funch. Excellent choice.
Winging it over here.
Here we go. Name is your buzzer. This Marvel character uses a patriotic shield.
John.
Lindsay.
John.
Captain America.
Captain America. John's on the board. Yes.
Gotta be quicker.
Captain America. Number two. If someone is kidding you, they're pulling your what?
John.
Lindsay.
John got there first.
Come on.
They're pulling your leg.
Pulling your leg, yes. Lindsay, you're just a little bit slow. Number three, this receiver has caught more passes than any player. Lindsay.
I don't know.
Funch. Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice is correct. More passes than any player in NFL history. Lindsay. Buzzed in.
Nice try.
Got the buzzing
thing
Lindsay.
Number four. The Red Sox play at what ballpark?
John.
Lindsay.
John.
Fenway Park.
Fenway Park is correct. It's John 3, Funch 1, Lindsay nothing. Number 5. What's the last name for the acting brothers named Chris, Luke?
John.
John.
Hemsworth.
Hemsworth is correct. John with a commanding 4-1 lead over Funch. Lindsay has not hit the board.
Lindsay's going for the Curtis. How many questions
Curtis,
are left?
Two more questions.
Okay.
Every time you say that, I score. So.
All right, good.
Number 6. How many World Series championships have the Dodgers won?
John.
John.
5.
No.
Lindsay.
Lindsay.
3.
No.
Funch.
Funch.
6.
6 is the correct answer. Yes. 6
say.
World championships. John 4, Funch 2, Lindsay.
All right, Lindsay.
Nothing.
Moment this of truth, one. Curtis.
Yeah, yeah.
Do we make because it's game of games, do we make this
No,
worth?
We can't because then all you got to do is get the last one.
Correct. We
okay,
cannot.
Well then so then I might as well not answer.
No, but you get the point because it's cumulative. So you'll take this point with you into tomorrow.
See, that's not what he said at the beginning. He said whoever has the most wins of each game. So
yeah,
now
that's what it is.
The rules.
That's what it is. It's the most wins of each game. So, John, you've clinched this point.
But well, I'll sit it out and let Lindsay and Funch battle it out.
Lindsay and Funch can both – Lindsay can go over.
Yeah. Well, wait, I want to see Lindsay take the Curtis, so I'm back in.
Okay. Star Wars, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, and Raiders of the Lost Ark – all had musical scores written
John.
By who? John.
John Williams?
John Williams is absolutely correct. Wow. Lindsay takes the Curtis. John with the dominating win. John is on the board in Game of Games with his first victory.
Now, Lindsay,
congratulations.
Tomorrow I'm going to write the game, and I'm going to tailor it to you to give you
don't.
A chance.
No, please don't. Please don't.
Don't give you a chance.
Easy on me.
No. And I still
John,
think...
John, you're acting like I'm not good at winning games. I win games all the time.
How many points did you get in this game?
It doesn't matter. We're talking about overall. We'll
Lindsay,
see
it
end.
Is
we'll
rare
see
to see somebody go 0-7.
I mean, I did lose out on 3 buzzers.
That's true. That's true.
That's true. All right. I want to throw something at you. Let me see. It's sort of related to what we've been talking about. A lot of people have talked about the kneeling for the national anthem that was done by Colin Kaepernick and then other players. Spurs coach Greg Popovich has now ripped Roger Goodell and the NFL. Pop called Goodell a smart man, but he couldn't understand the difference between the flag and what makes America great. Pop says he didn't fight for players' rights to kneel for the anthem. Is Popovich right?
Popovich is kind of an unimpeachable source on this, Mace, because he was the head coach at the Air Force for a really long time. I mean, he knows kids that have played for him that have then fought in the war and died. I mean, you can't accuse Greg Popovich of not understanding the military. I think Pop almost, at this point, he's 71 years old. I think he's incapable of BS. And I
think
he's...
Take the content of it. Do you agree? Roger Goodell, smart guy, couldn't understand the difference between the flag and what makes America great.
I don't know if Roger didn't understand it or if he just made a political choice, but I agree with Popovich. I think Popovich's point is a good one. What do you think?
I completely agree. In fact, you know, I've always said Roger Goodell leads from behind. Roger Goodell was behind on this because he did not stand up for players' rights to kneel during the national anthem to protest police brutality. Now he does. Now he will support it.
I saw him come out today. You were talking about leading from behind. I saw Goodell come out today and say that he now supports a team signing Colin Kaepernick and hopes that it happens. If you were the leader of the NFL,
yeah,
wouldn't you be working in the back room to go to some of your elite franchises and say, hey, we need to try and get Kaepernick back in the league? Like if I were Roger Goodell, I would go to the Chiefs. Lamar Hunt is one of my strongest owners, Andy Reid is one of my most solid coaches, and Patrick Mahomes is more entrenched than any quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
There is no question about the chain of command in Kansas City. And, oh, by the way, they're the defending Super Bowl champs. Get Kaepernick a training camp invite. Let him compete for the backup job. You don't have to give it to him. You know, but I think that would be a really good thing for the NFL and a smart. Now, Kaepernick may turn it down. He may say, look, I don't want to do it. I want to go to a place where I can compete to be the starter. And
let me ask you a question. You know who the Rams' backup quarterback is?
Well, it was Blake Bortles.
Not anymore.
Who is it now?
John Wolford.
Hey, Funch, did you find that Lewis Riddick that I sent you earlier?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, so listen to this. Speaking of that, Mace, listen to what Lewis Riddick said today on NFL Live.
Yeah, I think I'm going out to the West Coast, and I'm playing for Sean McVay and the L.A. Rams. I just think
that... Oh, hold on, French. I'm sorry. I didn't set it up right.
He thinks Cam.
Yeah, he thinks they should sign Cam Newton. But go ahead and play it now, French. He thinks that Lewis Riddick thinks that the Rams should sign Cam Newton. Here's why.
Yeah, I think I'm going out to the West Coast, and I'm playing for Sean McVay and the L.A. Rams. I just think that this offense, and I've been saying this all offseason, I think that coach in this offense marries up perfectly with what Cam's skill set is. It's an offense that runs through the run game, emphasizes play action, move the pocket, lots of boots, play action passes, getting outside on the perimeter. I think Cam would look perfect out there. I think he would just blow the doors off of his career out there, but he's probably not going to go there.
All right, so couldn't I say the same thing about Kaepernick? Don't they have similar skill sets? Quarterbacks who can throw and run?
Yep, they absolutely do. They've got the same skill set, and you know what? I would welcome either of those guys. And if the Rams signed Colin Kaepernick, there would be no blowback. In Los Angeles, in particular, there would be no blowback. I mean, I think that LA would embrace him. You know, there is. I saw a report last night that the Chargers might be considering Colin Kaepernick. I think in a place like Los Angeles, it may be different in some other cities, but in a place like Los Angeles, Colin Kaepernick would be embraced.
Boy,
what
Chargers,
he stands for would be embraced.
The Chargers don't have any room for Colin Kaepernick. They have Tyrod Taylor, and they drafted Justin Herbert. Are you going to just let Kaepernick stand there and hold a clipboard? The Rams make total sense. The Rams could, you know, Jared Goff is a guy who was great 2 years ago and struggled last year. If he got hurt, you put Kaepernick in there. It's a very progressive city. It's
Jeremy
a blue state.
Jeremy Fowler, on SportsCenter Saturday, mentioned several teams in need of depth behind their quarterbacks. Tennessee, Jacksonville, Washington, and the Chargers.
Why Chargers? You just
if they want to give Justin Herbert a true redshirt year, they could roll with Tyrod Taylor, an athletic quarterback, with Kaepernick right behind him, and give Justin Herbert a true redshirt year.
Okay, well, I will say this. If Tyrod Taylor got hurt, Kaepernick and Taylor have very similar skill sets.
Yes. And they've got a sketchy offensive line, the Chargers do.
And the reason I think Kansas City would be a good fit is nobody has Patrick Mahomes' skill set.
No.
It just doesn't exist. So then Kaepernick could come in and, you know, provide a weird thing. It'll be interesting.
I would welcome either, as a Rams fan, I would welcome either Colin Kaepernick or Cam Newton as the backup quarterback. I don't feel comfortable going into the season with John Wolford as backup quarterback.
Yeah. Although, would you be worried about messing with the head of Jared Goff? Because he's already shaky.
Yeah, but I mean, he's already shaky. That's a good, I mean, I completely understand. He would be entrenched as the starter. It's his job. But if something were to happen to Jared Goff, he's been very healthy so far. If something were to happen to Jared Goff, you can't expect a guy like John Wolford to lead that team. You need somebody with experience. You need somebody who can make a difference. Would it put some heat on Jared Goff? All of a sudden, there's another guy. We want him. Yes, it does. But that's a necessary consequence of being a starting quarterback in the NFL. You've got to have a reliable backup to go to.
And what you mentioned, the fact that he's been really durable, you know, every statistical metric suggests that that's not going to last. Even the really durable guys eventually get hurt. Aaron Rodgers gets hurt. Big Ben gets hurt. Matt Ryan gets hurt. I mean, all these guys get hurt sooner or later. So you want to have a solid backup if you can.
All right, coming up for you, it is Crosstalk with Alan Sliwa, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Crosstalk time, Alan Sliwa, how are you?
What's going on, Mace? Welcome back. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. I had a great break. Thanks for asking.
Listen to this. CBS just said, CBS TV just said that the golf yesterday, which was actual live real golf with no fans, the Charles Schwab Invitational at the Colonial in Fort Worth, Texas, got its highest ratings in 16 years.
Wow.
Averaging 3.1 million
That's
viewers,
crazy.
Up 50% from last year. Mace, this is why baseball is making such a critical error.
It's
because
disaster.
Just by putting live sports on, you're going to get eyeballs.
The idea was that they were going to be happening games. There was a time we had Bob Nightingale on. He said there was a 95% chance that we would have games on the air by the 4th of July. And now, who knows what that timetable would be? You've got. Let's say they settled it tomorrow. Well, no, if they settled it tomorrow, you got 3 weeks of spring training. You could still be on by July the 10th, maybe. So you still have a chance, but it's got to be resolved really quickly. And again, Bill Shaken today said it's hazy at best whether or not they're going to pull it off. And Sliwa, that would be a disaster for the game of baseball.
Do you guys think, I mean, is this just another negotiating tactic? I mean, I've said this, and John, I know
Could
you
be.
Mentioned it last week. John,
Could
you
be.
Mentioned that it's just a matter, not if they're going to play, but how many games they're going to play. Are they just trying to make this, you know, obviously from an owner's perspective, saying, all right, well, you guys want to have kind of your foot in this, or you want to have your kind of put your foot down. I guess you can say that the owners are doing the same thing. I mean, it all sounds stupid. It all sounds like we're just wasting time, and this could have or probably should have been done 2-3 weeks ago, but... Mace, you think this is something that just another tactic?
Well, I hope it is, because, you know, baseball has broken my heart before. Baseball broke my heart in 1994 when greed won the World Series. There was no World Series played that year. I pray that they're working on this. I pray that they get it together, because this could be, as John pointed out with the golf, could be for a couple of weeks just the best showcase that baseball could possibly have. And by the way, I agree with Shaken. If baseball gets going, nobody's going to remember all this stuff. Nobody's going to remember all the back and forth.
Right,
all the back
right.
and
if
forth
were,
is going to be in the past.
If they were close to a deal, let's Funch, let's play again Mike Greenberg. By the way, that show's starting right now on ESPN TV, the Return of Sports special. And for it, Greenberg taped interviews with six different commissioners. And here's an exchange he had with Rob Manfred. This, guys, this does not sound like somebody who wants to make a deal or is close to making a deal. And if he's trying to scare the players have already indicated they ain't being scared. They're dug in. Here's Manfred on a special that's airing now on ESPN.
You told Carl Ravitch here on ESPN last week that you felt 100% certain that there will be a season this year. How do you feel today?
Well, I know the owners are 100% committed to getting baseball back on the field. Unfortunately, I can't tell you that I'm 100% certain that's going to happen. I had been hopeful that once we got to common ground on the idea that we were going to pay the players full prorated salary, that we would get some cooperation in terms of proceeding under the agreement that we negotiated with the MLBPA on March 26th. Unfortunately, over the weekend, while Tony Clark was declaring his desire to get back to work, the union's top lawyer was out telling reporters, players, and eventually getting back to owners that as soon as we issued a schedule, as they requested, they intended to file a grievance claiming they were entitled to an additional $1 billion. Obviously, that sort of bad faith tactic makes it extremely difficult to move forward in these circumstances.
What are your concerns for the optics of this circumstance playing out as publicly as they are during the time in this country where all the other things, the confluence of events involving the pandemic and protest in the streets and everything else, of this playing out as publicly as it is?
It's just a disaster for our game. Absolutely no question about it. It shouldn't be happening, and it's important that we find a way to get past it and get the game back on the field for the benefit of our fans.
Would you describe your feelings as confident that there will still be a season?
I'm not confident. Mike. I think there's real risk, and as long as there's no dialogue, that real risk is going to continue.
So now, John and Alan, I think I'm going to put it a little more on the players. If they were to withdraw their demand to file a grievance for $1 billion, it sounds like it would be go time. And a lot of this argument is preamble for the negotiation of the CBA after the 2021 season. Let 2021 take care of itself. Get baseball back on the field now. Withdraw that threat of a $1 billion grievance, and let's play baseball.
Mace, you have to just imagine, John, the ratings you just talked about, and we already know what the ratings did for just some of these other things that have been going on, whether it was The Last Dance or it was Tom Brady with Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, and Peyton Manning. There is such an incredible hunger. They can't be that stupid. They really can't. You know that these guys are all – I mean, Max Scherzer just sent out a tweet. I don't know if you guys read this.
No.
Rob Manfred and the owners are walking back on their word. Again, the fans do not deserve this. So I'll say it one more time. Tell us when and where. That's his, you know, obviously tweet.
But let's entertain Mason's question for a second, Alan, that if they withdrew the grievance, would they just – both sides agreed, hey, for the 2020 season, nobody's going to file a grievance. We're just going to get through this. And in 2021, if you want to sue us, if you want to file a grievance, if you want to do whatever you want, these are incredibly unique circumstances. We're going to do it. The owners could also file a grievance against the players.
Sure.
Why not just agree to that, Alan? Why just say, okay, neither side files a grievance and we get on the field? What's wrong with that?
You know, one of the things that I think we've spent the last 2-3 weeks on was feeling good that they were actually talking and they're not talking now. Mace, it's not a bad point, right? If you can just kind of just do everything you can to just get this season started, complete the season, hopefully complete the season. I mean, John, you mentioned this, to be cautious even with the NBA about COVID-19 and, you know, potentially some of the health risks that run there. If they just finished a season, got a season started, it would be, you know, obviously monumental at this point. Yeah, Mace, it's not a bad point of just trying to move forward.
It sounds like that's a sticking point now. The sticking point isn't the 48 games or the 50 games. The sticking point isn't the pro rata salary, which were both agreed. Well, the pro rata salary was agreed to in the March agreement. The 48 games is part of what Rob Manfred was able to negotiate in that March agreement that says he will have final determination on what the season will be, how many games, when it will be played, if no agreement could be reached between players and owners. So for me, the one sticking point is now the players threatening to file a grievance for $1 billion. If the players take that off the table, there will be baseball. It comes down to that. Now it's a little bit more on the players to concede on this very last point that would get us baseball on the field in July.
Yeah, Manfred didn't hesitate.
We lost Alan for a second
we lost,
there.
We lost him there. It'll be interesting to see how they go back to the table now, because it's clear that the two sides don't like each other. You know, they're going to agree to do something, but
let me throw a different story at you. I got a bunch of headlines here.
Okay,
Oklahoma State running back Chuba Hubbard. He was the leading rusher in college football last year with over 2,000 yards. He spotted on social media head coach Mike Gundy wearing a T-shirt promoting the OAN network. Now, OAN is One American News. It is a far right, and when I say far right, I mean way, way, way far right news network that is actually called Black Lives Matter, a terrorist organization. Does Chuba Hubbard have a point here? How should Gundy handle this?
Well, let me update you on what's happened since Hubbard put that tweet out. Hubbard and Gundy went to the football meeting room and basically put out a video where Gundy apologized for wearing the shirt and Hubbard apologized for not going directly to Gundy first, and how they were going to make changes and come together. But to me, and I guess, Alan, we have you back now?
Yeah, right here.
Okay. Mike Gundy has always, to me, come across as somebody who doesn't really get it. I don't. He just strikes me as somebody that is probably going to step in it again. So it makes me think, because he wins, they keep him, and he was a quarterback there, and he's a big name there. But
and he is famous for the speech, "I'm 40."
Yeah, I want to see what changes specifically Gundy is a part of making, and I hope Hubbard holds his feet to the fire, so to speak, and you know, if there's changes those players at Oklahoma State want to see made, I hope they give him a list, and let's see if he does it. Because Gundy's never struck me as very progressive.
Yeah, the only thing about the video that wasn't crazy about, Hubbard apologized. He doesn't need to apologize. I mean, you know, obviously he was...
Well, what he apologized for was not going directly to Gundy and going to Twitter. I understand that.
And he said, you know, in his tweet, "Change is coming, I promise you that." But listen, it just shows how sensitive everybody is right now, and they should be. So this is somebody that voices opinion. It went, you know, right off the bat. It obviously got a lot of news, and Oklahoma State didn't waste much time at all to put out this video. But that just kind of shows the environment that we're in right now. Like you mentioned, Mace, OAN is extremely, extremely right. So it's he took it as
not Fox News right, like crazy conspiracy right.
Mm-hmm. Which is their strategy, right?
Like, yes.
that's what they're doing. And obviously that's a player, and I'm sure he's not the only player that took it as, why are you wearing that right now? And at least they did chat about it, or at least had a conversation about it.
Yeah, and by the way, we didn't mention this today, but, you know, there was another unarmed black man shot in Atlanta this weekend, Rayshard Brooks, which caused another round of protests. There was a Wendy's burned down in that incident in Atlanta. He had fallen asleep in his car outside of Wendy's and wound up dead by the time officers were done with him. The one officer was fired. The other one has been suspended, and that has been ruled a homicide. The police chief stepped down. So there's no – we want to talk about substantial change, but – these things continue to happen. And, you know, I think particularly now, people in positions of leadership like Mike Gundy need to be really sensitive. You know, you don't put on a shirt for a crazy wacko news network that has called Black Lives Matter a terrorist organization. You don't wear that at this particular time.
I was going to say, you got to read
it. You don't ever wear it. So, you know, I think that we've got to all be awake to exactly what's going on. And we'd love to think that George Floyd was the last incident that we're going to see, but we're not. We just saw another one. People are going to continue to hold authorities' feet to the fire over this for a long time to come. And this problem isn't fixed. This problem is systemic. It is going to take time to address these issues, and it's going to take a long time.
I know we're coming up to a break, but Mace, I wanted to definitely ask you guys, you know, that same question just brings back what's happened in the NBA the last couple of days, right? Just, okay, well, if there are some players, of course it's not 80% of the players or 90% of the players that are sitting back and saying, could it be a distraction to have games played? It's a question, right? Nobody has to sit here and voice their opinion of 100% it's going to be this way or that way. But let's do a coming back, because I do want to get your guys' thoughts on that.
All right, cool. More crosstalk is coming up next for you, Mason, in Ireland, 710 ESPN. A new player coalition has now been formed. This is New York Post, led by injured Nets point guard Kyrie Irving, to continue a push to derail the NBA's Orlando restart because of concerns over taking the spotlight away from the Black Lives Matter movement. The coalition, of which Lakers reserve Avery Bradley is also an organizer, is being put together to provide a voice for players who, according to ESPN, fear retribution if they openly voice their concerns.
What's weird about that story that you're reading in the New York Post is it goes on to say sources told the Post other players are concerned less about stealing the spotlight from Black Lives Matter and more about being away from their wives, girlfriends, and other companionship in the Disney World bubble for at least 6 weeks. Now, I don't know if that's just the Post reporter speculating that, but that's a completely different issue, obviously, if they don't want to. Because I think, Alan, you need to conflate, or it's easy to conflate, the coronavirus issue versus the Black Lives Matter protests. And I think there is some overlap. But at the same time, those are two. If somebody doesn't want to go down there and play because they're scared of the coronavirus or they don't like the terms of the campus, that's one thing. But the protests are another thing. I'd be curious to see which side of the issues they're focused on here.
Yeah, I could see it, John, being just a combination. It's you already have pretty much 3+ months. It's going to be 4 months by the time they get going again, of a season that just stopped abruptly. You have, you know, different. Listen, let's kind of point it how it is. There's different states right now across the country where COVID-19 cases are starting to, you know, obviously go back on the rise. So I'm sure that's something that's in the back of their mind. And then you have players. We'll just use that call, for example, on Friday, that are wondering if us going back to the game of basketball. It's not just Kyrie Irving. I think Kyrie, yes, he's maybe the leader of it, but it sounds like more players. You know, Lou Williams had some tweets that was active this weekend talking about how it could be a distraction. You know, obviously Dwight Howard, Avery Bradley was mentioned. So, yeah, I'm curious. This is what I think, you know, ultimately what it will come down to. Is it a small percentage of players or is it a growing number of players that say, yeah, you know what, we can actually make a bigger stance if we didn't play or if we did? I don't have the answer, but you know, that certainly sounds like that could be a question over the next week or so.
Alan, you got to read something?
Crosstalk on 710 ESPN is powered by Power Pro Heating and Air and their Cross Trade Power Pro Service specials. Great Cross Trade service for our listeners right now. $99 drain cleaning. You can visit powerproplumbing.com. Mace, do you sympathize at all with some of these players that are taking the stance of, I don't know, I think maybe NBA could be more of a distraction than it could be helpful?
Well, I mean, there's no question that when the NBA starts, there is going to be a lot of focus on it. And yes, it may take focus away. I'm going to be honest. It may take focus away from some of the protests and the Black Lives Matter movement. There's no question about that. But the question is, can NBA players take advantage of this enormous stage? I mean, John just said some golf thing got huge ratings yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big golf guy, but I'm sure it was a big deal. They played a tournament and it got huge ratings. NBA games are going to get unbelievable ratings. Are there ways to maximize the attention that the Black Lives Matter movement will get? Are there ways to create more opportunities to speak that message about police brutality and criminal justice reform? To me, that's what the opportunity is here. You can use this stage. And by the way, this growing number of players, I won't say growing. These players, led by Kyrie Irving, have got leverage right now. They can say, hey, look, we can resolve this if we show the national anthem before every game and we're allowed to take a knee to protest the police brutality to support Black Lives Matter. Or we want X number of commercials or public service announcements during the game promoting our initiatives. There are ways right now for those players to take advantage of their leverage to actually be able to broaden their message.
Here's more on that, Mace. Woj and Malika Andrews have updated an article that they wrote earlier in the day about this coalition you were talking about. It says that Irving, Avery Bradley, and the coalition of players want to pursue some concerns further with the league, including the investment of resources and ideas of all league constituencies from the commissioner's office, ownership level, management, and players association into social justice reform. So they're, you know, they want to use the leverage that you're talking about to address specific issues. And you can't fault them for that. You know, no. I know a lot of people want to see basketball, and we might still get it. It sounds like the majority of reporters who've been covering this think that it's still a really strong possibility that this Orlando campus is going to happen. But what these guys are saying is, okay, let's address some things before we get to that point. They did a call today with 40 players. That's on top of the one they did on Friday with about 100 players. The Monday call, the call today, included John Carlos, the U.S. gold medalist in 1968, sharing his perspective on social justice. So I think they're talking. I don't necessarily think this means they're not going to play, Alan. I think there's a good chance this Orlando campus thing's still going to happen. But this coalition wants to take what they have, take some of this leverage, and use it to promote their cause. And I have, you know, I'm not going to criticize them for that. I think that that's, if this is important to them, they should speak up.
That's the one thing that I kind of walked away with the last couple of days. Even today, Kyrie's getting a lot, and maybe just because it's from the messenger. But I think a lot of people have put, well, you know, Kyrie, this is it's because he can't be in Orlando. What if it's not? What if he's just using it like you just mentioned, John? This is an incredible opportunity. What if this conversation wasn't had? What if this opportunity in Orlando now is going to be met with a ton more awareness because the NBA is saying, you know what, you guys are right. We need to do this and we need to do that and we need to do this. And Lou Williams, who on Twitter, we're fighting for radical change. Sports has been a healing factor. There we agree. In this climate, it's a distraction. I mean, look at your position. You're dying to get back in the house, drink a beer, watch us hoop opposed to being outside fighting for equality. That's just one aspect to look at it. Maybe after all this discussion is had, maybe they approach Orlando much different than they would have if somebody like Kyrie didn't say anything.
Well, like Mason pointed out, they don't right now televise the national anthem. You know, that's when we go to break. That's when all now when the if you bring in a big name to sing it, like for the conference finals or the finals, sometimes they'll televise that. But maybe now they do televise the anthem where they use that time to honor, you know, if you go back and study why we started playing the anthem at sporting events in the first place, it was to honor fallen soldiers in World War I. It goes back to 1918. That's, you know, 102 years ago. We could reroute some of that. We could honor different people or make a public service announcement or do something different. These are all conversations that you can't fault these guys for trying to have.
Yeah, and I think that could lead to just more ideas come Orlando. Maybe they're all, like you just mentioned, John, what if they're all wearing Black Lives Matter jersey? Like, you never know. It could spark something where, Mace, like you mentioned, all the attention that's going to go to the NBA, all the ratings that are going to go to the NBA could actually be used in an incredible way rather than just not having that conversation.
All right, that's it for us. What do you got coming up, Alan?
All right, we got Allie Clifton, Spectrum Sportsnet, Brad Turner, The LA Times, and Michael Lee has an article from The Athletic. Kyrie isn't being an agitator. He's doing his job, so we'll get into all that.
Cool. That's coming up for you. We're back tomorrow, 2:55 sharp. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.